Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. All of it brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Right now, Three Martini Lunch listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. And they'll do all the work for you, lining up the great candidates. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/martini. More on them in a little bit. And Jim, let's start. Hopefully folks still have an appetite for this. The NFL, we have some good news, we think, on this. This news is actually a day or so old, but given all the craziness we've been talking about the last couple of days, it's important that we spend a little bit of time on this, especially given all the tumult that we've seen over the anthem protests. Some of this started to ratchet up a little bit following the most recent games when the owners of the Cowboys and the Dolphins said, our players are going to stand, Jerry Jones saying, if you don't stand for the anthem, you're benched for the game and so forth. And so Roger Goodell sends out a memo to the NFL saying, like many of our fans, we believe that everyone should stand for the national anthem. We want to honor our flag and our country, and our fans expect that of us. The controversy over the anthem is a barrier to having honest conversations and making real progress on the underlying issues. We need to move past this controversy, and we want to do that together with our players. Jim, I'm sure deep down somewhere, Roger Goodell actually has an interest in solving this issue. I'm sure not to do with his tanking ratings or the fact that the NFL brand is cratering. President Trump declaring victory on this, saying Goodell finally did the right thing, making the players stand. And then just to make things slightly more confusing, perhaps a lot more confusing, the NFL released a statement later saying, commentary this morning about the commissioner's position in the anthem is not accurate. As we said yesterday, there will be a discussion of these issues at the owners' meeting next week. The NFL is doing the hard work of trying to move from protest to progress, yada, yada, yada. So, Jim, is this about pressure, business, and otherwise, that Roger Goodell finally did the right thing, or did he realize that this was overshadowing the product and many other things that could potentially harm the NFL?
Yeah, well, first of all, it's appropriate we should talk about this on Thursday, Greg, because there is Thursday Night Football.
Oh, yes.
Probably the most easily ignored game of the week, usually two substandard teams in day-glow neon uniforms, hurting your eyes and generally playing terribly because they've only had 3 days of practice. But it'll be interesting to see if this statement from the league saying we think everyone should stop kneeling, it's time to stand for the anthem, gets players to agree, or whether more decide to kind of rebel against Goodell and show, hey, you're not the boss of me or something like that. It certainly will be interesting to see if any Dallas Cowboys choose to kneel and kind of, you know, push their luck, or see if Jerry Jones is really willing to enforce this policy. But I think it's very interesting to see how quickly things have moved in about a 2 week span. There were a lot of people, and in fact, polling numbers indicates that a lot of people didn't like Trump wading into this controversy that seemed to have been dying down with this kind of off the cuff stream of consciousness bit that he did in a speech back in a couple weeks ago in Alabama for Luther Strange. And all of a sudden that just poured this gasoline on the fire. And, Sports Illustrated showed, the sports world against Trump, and it looked like Trump was really going to be, had bitten off more than he can chew. Except the only thing he had going for him is the fact that a large number of Americans really don't like the idea of kneeling or refusing to stand for the national anthem. And the players had been kind of foolish enough to kind of buy into this and to say that, the best way we can demonstrate what we want to say and what our values are and our perspective on this is to kneel during the national anthem, or in the case of one of the Buffalo Bills running backs, to do stretching during the national anthem. Because you talk to these guys and you actually, put a camera in their face and a microphone in their face, they're concerned about police brutality, lack of accountability of the police, different treatment of different races based on the police. These are all legitimate concerns and things we can talk about. But no one can hear or see any of that when all they see is you taking a knee. Only thing they see when you take a knee is, I don't feel about this country the way you do. I don't stand the way you do. You are doing it because out of respect for the flag, out of love for your country, in order to show respect for the country that protects our freedoms, all of that. And you've decided, no, that's not good enough for me. And I was saying this back from the beginning of the Colin Kaepernick controversy. He managed to pick probably the single least persuasive, the single most alienating format of making his point. And part of this reflects the fact that Colin Kaepernick likes Fidel Castro and thinks he's helping things when he wears socks that have cops as pigs and stuff like that. And a good portion of the NFL was suckered into following Colin Kaepernick into this cul-de-sac, into this box canyon, where Trump got to say, look, I stand for the flag. What's wrong with you guys? And they've lost the fight. I think, you know, Roger Goodell does not issue that statement if the public, if the ratings are okay, if the advertisers are happy, if the attendance is okay, and everything is going fine. This is a dramatic reversal. A couple of weeks ago, it was like, look, we don't like this criticism of our players. We understand and respect their stand, et cetera, et cetera. Now it's, hey, we'd like to see everybody to stand, right? That will be interesting to see how things go at that league meeting, particularly of how the players respond this week and also how the ratings are and attendance and all these other indicators of fan interest and support. Look, this is if not the full scale, you know, white flag, you know, Roger Goodell is putting the bleach in his laundry. He's getting the white flag ready. He really wants this to go away. And it'd be interesting to see at what point does his, you know, tone get from, hey, everybody, it's time to put this behind us to, okay, guys, you're hurting the bottom line. You need to stop kneeling, which I think is probably another week or two if players continue with this.
Wow. Got a couple quick points here. First of all, I don't think it's necessarily going to go all that quietly since you got Michael Wilbon and a few other people calling Jerry Jones plantation owners by mandating that their players stand. And since Goodell works for the owners, they might see him in that light as well. But I have two quick questions for you, Jim. The first one is really going to date me. But do you remember when we were kids and you'd watch the NFL games and a couple times during a game, there'd be these really good United Way ads about players working in their communities?
Mm.
Wouldn't that be so much better than just taking a knee for the anthem, but showing this player, here's usually his beautiful family, and here's how he's mentoring kids in the city, or how he's working to foster better community relations, maybe even between the police and the community. Hopefully not overtly political in the way they do the ads, but actually showing that they're doing something other than what they're doing in the minute before the game.
There's more that a player can do besides take a knee. Right? I mean, these guys have really considerable resources, really considerable platforms. Yes, if you're the backup offensive lineman, maybe the media is not going to be so interested in what you have to say. But a lot of these guys are big time stars. And if these guys start talking about this and saying, you know, I think police body cameras are a really good idea. I really, you know, they do a lot to dispel false allegations of police misconduct and also let us help us verify allegations of police. You know, like nobody's really focusing that much on, OK, you're really upset about this problem in American society. What do you want to do about it? Do you want to see prosecutions? Do you want to see what's the solution you want? And I think people respond, you know, differently and better to that than this kind of symbolic statement, because there's always a sense of, OK, you're upset about a condition in America. What do you need to see to get you to stand again? And, you know, most players, I don't even know how many players have kind of thought that far ahead.
Wow. And given Trump's position here, I think part of it is just his visceral reaction. Part of it is I think he believes it's a winning political issue for him. But another issue that was brought to my attention, I can't believe I didn't think about this sooner in this controversy, is Trump was a USFL owner who basically got clocked by the NFL in the 1980s. And I just wonder if he has any lingering resentment towards the league, towards the Shield.
It is entirely possible. Somebody would ask the question of, man, if you can go broke with, you know, casinos, steak, water, and professional football, that's kind of the reverse Midas touch. Those are probably the easiest things you could possibly sell and make money on. But again, also, like, Trump's been friends with the Robert Kraft for a lot of years, which probably doesn't speak terribly well of either one of them, whether you hate Trump or whether you hate the Patriots more. But basically, this I wouldn't be surprised if there's some of that animus. But I think there's just a general sense that for all of his flaws, Trump feels like when the national anthem, you stand, and you know, his instinct, you know, as much as he makes terrible judgments on a day after day, he has good instincts for this kind of stuff of recognizing when somebody is out of step with the broader American public. And that's, you know, my boss, Rich Lowry, wrote about it this week and basically said that if Trump was reelected, it's probably going to be because something like this, where Democrats have fooled themselves into an echo chamber of believing their position is very strong and very popularly supported. This, which is more or less what happened with the NFL players and sports media here. Everybody thought this was a great stance, except until people stopped watching the NFL games. Wow. And all of a sudden, Roger Goodell is like, whoa, wait a second. All of a sudden, this is such a good idea.
Yeah, I think there was an assumption that the audience would never leave. And for some, that's true. But for a big enough chunk, that wasn't true. So we'll see how it goes from here. Let's move on to the bad martini now, which is a little bit good in the beginning here. And then we'll talk about why it's bad. First of all, our bad martini a couple days ago, Jim, was that Twitter had censored a video ad by Tennessee Congresswoman and Senate candidate Marsha Blackburn. She talked about how she fought to stop the sale of baby body parts, and they said that was too inflammatory and could have a negative reaction. Well, she won. The backlash from her supporters led to Twitter reversing course, and she's calling that the first Senate conservative victory as a result of Twitter changing its mind, so her video is back up. Not to be outdone, however, Twitter has decided to step in it one more time this week, and perhaps this one's even worse. This is courtesy of the Huffington Post. Actress Rose McGowan posted a message to Instagram late Wednesday saying that Twitter had suspended her account. "Twitter has suspended me," the actress wrote. "There are powerful forces at work. Be my voice." McGowan has been a vocal critic of film producer Harvey Weinstein, who has been accused of sexually harassing and assaulting multiple women, including McGowan. She settled a lawsuit against Weinstein in 1997 after an incident in a hotel room at the Sundance Film Festival, according to the New York Times. She included a screenshot of her Twitter account page with a message from the company. The notice said that Twitter determined McGowan's account had violated the Twitter rules. She was suspended from sending tweets, retweets, and liking messages, though her account remained visible to users. In order to begin the 12-hour suspension, the message told her to delete tweets that violated the company's rules. So I guess she's got to figure out what they are. In addition to blasting Harvey Weinstein, she's called for a petition to force the resignation of everyone on the board of directors at the Weinstein Company. And she's been very harsh towards Ben Affleck, who said he knew nothing about Weinstein's actions. And she pointed out that she told him about them back in the 90s. And now, of course, Ben Affleck has been slapped around by the internet here in the last couple of days with, I think we're up to three now, allegations of inappropriate contact, two of them on video, Jim. So what do you make of Twitter deciding that Rose McGowan needed a timeout here?
We mentioned earlier in the week, oh, okay, it's the pro-life congresswoman's ad is the one thing they choose to ban and restrict. Still can't find any of the Nazis, right? You know, you're getting, we're going to put you in the ovens messages every other day, but no, we can't find any of those guys, but we'll go after them. In the process of doing research for this discussion, Greg, I came across this golden comment from Mark Zuckerberg, the creator of Facebook. I'd never heard this before. But he described Twitter as, quote, a clown car that crashed into a gold mine. And it just seems very accurate because it's not like Twitter makes good judgment, right? I mean, you know, if you ask any Twitter user, what's the one change to Twitter you'd like to see besides all the neo-Nazis, you know, who are harassing you go away? And they would probably say, oh, you know, I like the edit button. You know, sometimes I tweet something out, I get a typo. It's really embarrassing. I have to either delete it after it's been retweeted a bazillion times, or I need to put up a second one, and the second one doesn't get the same amount of reaction, and I just feel very foolish. Just let me fix my typos. And so what does Twitter say? We're going to give some people 280 characters. No, that's not, you know, I just need an edit button. We're going to change the square picture of you to a circle picture of you. No, that's not what I needed either. We're going to make graphics easier to add. No, just give me the edit button. And they just won't do that. And then, of course, their idea of what they're going to restrict. I remember when they formed their, God, what was it, Orwellian, you know, Trust and Safety Council or something like that. And it was all basically tech media lefties. The fact that there's not anyone who's even remotely libertarian, conservative or anything like that on this group of like 30 or 40 people they selected. And in fact, had a lot of people back from the left side of the argument about Gamergate. It was kind of this sense of, well, are they setting up a one to create a more respectful and more pleasant media environment, or were they only doing this to basically shut down the conservative voices they don't like? Well, look, I don't think you necessarily can call Rose McGowan a conservative, but she is irking the wrong people, and they've decided, okay, we're going to shut her down. We're going to go after Marsha Blackburn. We're not going to go after Milo for any of the other hideous stuff he did. But once he harassed a Saturday Night Live actress, well, then they got, you know, then it's dial 911. Then all of a sudden they roll into action and all that kind of stuff. So, like I said, the argument for abandoning Twitter becomes more stronger and stronger because the company makes just about the worst decision time after time on issues of content and quality and appropriateness and things like that.
Maybe Twitter needs some new people at the top of the food chain. People can make better decisions about what's a real threat to dialogue and what's not. Perhaps ZipRecruiter could help if they're so inclined to do that. And if you're hiring, you know that quality hires keep your business moving forward. But you also know it can take a lot of time to find the right candidate for the job.
With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to more than 100 of the web's leading job boards with just one click. So you can rest easy knowing that your job is being seen by the right candidates. Then ZipRecruiter puts its smart matching technology to work. It actively notifies qualified candidates about your job within minutes of posting, so you receive the best possible matches. That's what makes ZipRecruiter different. Unlike other hiring sites, ZipRecruiter does not depend on the right candidates finding you. It finds them for you. You can even get a head start on the interview process by adding a screening question or two to your next job post to help identify the most qualified candidates, so you don't have to waste time sorting through a stack of resumes to find the perfect fit.
No wonder 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate, not just a candidate, a quality candidate, through the site in just one day. And the easy-to-use ZipRecruiter dashboard lets you manage your hiring process from start to finish, all in one place. ZipRecruiter is the smartest way to hire. So find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by growing businesses of all sizes and industries to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, listeners to 3 Martini Lunch can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/martini. ZipRecruiter.com/martini. One more time to try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/martini. Jim, our crazy martini today is a follow-up to yesterday's bad martini. And if folks don't remember right away what that is, it was President Trump's tweet in response to what he considered fake news coming out of NBC. He's had a couple of tweets about what he considers fake news at NBC. One was the moron quote from Rex Tillerson, but the one specifically he was referring to was that he wanted to increase the size of our nuclear arsenal tenfold. And that tweet read, "With all of the fake news coming out of NBC and the networks, at what point is it appropriate to challenge their license? Bad for country." And so that drew a lot of criticism from right and left. Undeterred, the president later in the day actually upped the ante by saying network news has become so partisan, distorted, and fake that licenses must be challenged and, if appropriate, revoked. Not fair to public. So among those not happy with that particular approach to the First Amendment when it comes to freedom of the press, Nebraska Senator Ben Sasse, who has never exactly been Trump's strongest supporter, issues a statement saying, quote, "Mr. President, words spoken by the President of the United States matter. Are you tonight recanting of the oath you took on January 20th to preserve, protect, and defend the First Amendment?" Trump has not responded to Sasse, as far as I can tell, but Trump ally Sean Hannity certainly has. In a tweet, he says, "One of the biggest mistakes in my career was supporting Ben Sasse. Just useless." And he links to Sasse's Twitter post with this statement, so he's clearly reacting to this. And at some other point, I don't know if it was on Twitter or somewhere else, Jim, he says, "Ben Sasse, where were you when the Obama Justice Department went after James Rosen and the AP reporters?" Well, the answer to that question is he was president of Midland University in Nebraska at the time. He wasn't elected till late 2014, and those scandals erupted in 2013, and we certainly covered those a great deal and condemned the Obama administration for that. So, Jim, obviously Sean Hannity is more than willing to carry the water for Trump on just about anything. What do you make of the fact that he's going to the wall and going to the mat against Ben Sasse over this?
If you begin your presidency, as every president does, by taking an oath to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution, Greg, I assume that would include reading it, right? I mean, they don't just mean don't let the particular piece of paper in the National Archives get burned. It's not the actual document itself. It is basically the freedoms that are written down on that and that, you know, are that form the entire structure of our government right there in the Constitution and the First Amendment. And you know, it's kind of fascinating to see, you know, when Trump said this yesterday, basically taking the routine, ugh, the media, ugh, God, they get everything wrong. Ugh, they're so biased. Ugh, they're never fair. You know, like the complaint that a lot of people all across the spectrum have, but the conservatives had, as a pretty strong and well-bounded and you know, unbearably supported with documentation argument the conservatives made for a really long time. And Trump took it one step further of, well, they just shouldn't be allowed to do that. They just, you know, we should just take away the broadcast licenses so they can't broadcast things like that. When somebody said, where do they get their TV license? Well, the license is right there in the Constitution, right? Congress shall make no law. You as a government cannot shut down a television network because of content. And if Trump had bothered to take a look at his own Federal Communications Commission staffers, they would say, actually, no, you know, that the government cannot deny someone a license because they don't like the coverage of the government or they don't like the coverage of the president. That's just not the way the First Amendment works. And I don't think you'd last 5 minutes in court with an argument like that. Trump went with it. He went back with it. And you were sitting there thinking, which figure in the media would end up arguing against the First Amendment? Which figure in the media would say, yes, we need the government shutting down television networks that are critical of the president? Well, we have our answer. Sean Hannity. He's right there reporting for duty.
Yeah, you'd think at best he would just let it go. Obviously, he harbors some grudges towards Sass over how Sass treated Trump in the campaign. And as we have discussed many times here, Jim, and you articulated it well just a moment ago, there is deep-seated bias and unvarnished bias now against the president in a lot of ways. And it's led to a number of stories being wrong, and pointing that out and hammering the media for that is absolutely fine. This step is just not.
The freedom of speech doesn't mean anything if you're not free to say something that's unpopular, if you're not free to say something that other people object to, and that you're not free to say something that you think is wrong. There are libel laws, there are slander laws and things like that. But ultimately, we don't want the president of the United States saying, basically censoring the news and saying, I think that's too critical of me. You're not allowed to say that. That's the most fundamentally un-American concept you can imagine. That's what happens in dictatorships and oppressive regimes all around the world. And what's kind of chilling is that Trump says, we should have, and there's some percentage of Americans say, yes, absolutely. I want the president of the United States censoring the news so that I no longer encounter things that I, news coverage that I don't like. This gets you excited and ready to go for Thursday Night Football.
Oh, the color rush. Thursday Night Football is bad enough for all the reasons you said. The color rush, man, that just makes it unbearable.
It's like, they should run some sort of message ahead of time. Do not adjust your set. These are actually the colors of the uniforms.
They're hideous. They're always hideous. Jim, talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Don't forget to visit our friends at ZipRecruiter and post those jobs for free online. ZipRecruiter.com/martini. And tune in again Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.